Super Awesome Mix is brought to you by DLM. Make shopping easy with DLM, the one-stop shop for all your casual clothing needs. Shop DLMSupplyCo.com and enter the promo code AWESOME at checkout to save 15% off your first purchase. That's DLMSupplyCo.com. Welcome back to another Super Awesome Mix. My name is Matt Sidholm, alongside my co-host and co-founder, Samer Abousalbi. Samer, how are we doing this week?
Really well. Thank you for asking. How about yourself, Matt? I never ask you how you're doing.
You don't. It's a one-way street. I'm only concerned with your well-being. But I'm doing great as well, and we have another great guest on the podcast this week.
Yes, we do. This is actually a pretty cool story. I'll tell you real quick how we got this guest. His name is Tony Smith. He's actually was the lead guitarist and vocalist for a band called Sleeper Agent, which I had seen live something about like 10 years ago. They were touring with Ben Queller. Amazing concert. I fell in love with the music back then. And we connected on Instagram, and I just thought this is so cool because, like, I, you know, got to see this band live, and here is the guitarist from that band. So we got to talking, and he agreed to be a guest on our show and make us an amazing mix. So Tony, so nice to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us. Tell us about your mix.
Let me just get into the mix. Okay. It's pretty much just like kind of like my life in song, sort of, you know, like there's some publications that run that with different artists. I think Pitchfork does one. Mm-hmm. And I thought about like, I don't know, it was really tough because 12 songs is a challenge for 34 years, you know?
But, right, yes.
So, I just try to like capture the spirit of every period of my life, you know, like childhood, early elementary school, high school, college, then adulthood, you know, which is a much longer period than the rest of them. So, that's pretty much the gist of it.
I got to say, you had a much cooler, I think, music upbringing than I did. So I'm pretty jealous.
Well, I don't know how cool it was because, I mean, like, it is interesting because from my mom's side of things, it was very, like, 70s singer-songwriter, like mm-hmm. a lot of Carpenters and Jim Croce was on the mix, and then John Denver was another big one, more on the like Christian side, Amy Grant, just like, I don't know, like as much, like Helen Reddy was another big one, listened to all the time. Oh, Christopher Cross, that was every Saturday. She would get up first thing in the morning and put on Ride Like the Wind, and I knew it was time to clean the house. It was just like this. It was like a Saturday like ritual.
Just Pavlovian response.
For a guy best known as Yacht Rock, I mean, he's got one of the greatest pump-up songs of all time with Ride Like the Wind.
Sure.
I totally agree.
But she would open the windows and crank that song on like this tacky blue turntable we had. And people talk about growing up how they got to sleep in on the weekends, and I never did. It was that song came on at like 7 in the morning, and it was time to get up and clean the house. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And, I'm going to try that with my kids. Yeah. I can't wait.
But I'll tell you what, it helped out in life because my house is like spotless all the time. It was just like so ingrained in me.
Before we get into your mix, if you hear that song just suddenly, you know, if you're like at a bar, do you just suddenly feel like you need to start cleaning up?
No, but it's like definitely triggering. I don't listen to that song anymore. Like, you know, every once in a while I throw on like Sailing because it's kind of like calm.
Right.
But I don't know. Probably not. Probably wouldn't listen to it now.
That's
great. It'd be interesting if you had this like Pavlovian response to that song.
I bet I do.
Like,
but it's been years. So, but then from my dad's side, we had like, his favorite band growing up was Kiss. And he actually kind of had a, when he met my mom, they kind of converted to Catholicism. And so he actually ended up getting rid of his, like sold or just donated his entire record collection. Because I guess like he really wanted to go deep in the paint, as they call it, with Catholicism.
Right.
So he got rid of all of his secular records. And as I was a kid, he kind of like regretted that and started rebuilding a collection. But when he did that, he kind of got more into cassettes, which were big at the time. And so he had like a lot of Rush and Foreigner and Journey. And I don't know, he's kind of an 80s kid. So like, or 80s, 20 something. So that was his big thing was like the, I don't know, like more, the more kind of like commercial, heavy rock bands. And Rush was his, probably his favorite. So I grew up listening to Rush and I thought it was like the coolest band in the world because I didn't understand it.
Well, that's a pretty good favorite to have if you're going to have a favorite growing up. I think that's a strong one. But let's get into your mix here.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of strong ones, you start off with just an absolute classic. I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. So what made you kick us off with this one?
Well, that is like probably my all-time favorite song. I just think it's a perfect song in every way. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. And still to this day, it's just like, I'm like, oh, that's the perfect pop song. And I tried it at karaoke once, and it was such a bad idea. Like, my range is all right, but it's not like young Michael's range.
But, yeah, that's a bold choice for karaoke.
That is. Golly.
But I got worn out like halfway through it. I'm like, all right, never mind. So I pretty much like chose that because Michael Jackson was my first love as a kid. So when I was growing up, you know, like all kind of, I'll separate the artist from his later years, but like when I was a kid, like Dangerous had this huge album rollout, and man, like I cut up my gloves, I would try to moonwalk. I just thought like Michael Jackson was the coolest guy. And my mom ended up showing me Jackson 5, and like that was like, even better because I was like, oh, he's like my age, you know. And so, yeah, I don't know. I feel like just I Want You Back is like the perfect song.
It's just kind of amazing that it's just like one of the most enduring pop songs ever, right? Like it's released in 1969, and here we are over 50 years later. And I think you could play it to almost anyone, and they're going to recognize it. They're going to know. Like, at the very least, it's a Jackson 5 song. You know, they might not even get the title, but, like, just amazing that that song is still playing and still has the power that it does. I agree. It's just one of the most perfect songs ever.
Yeah, and that bass line, you know, it's just amazing.
And even my kid, you know, my kids are, you know, 8 and 4, and they're both, you know, I could play this for them, and they get into it. You know, they don't really understand the Jackson 5 or who Michael Jackson is, but, you know, this song gets them on their feet. You know, they're into it.
Yeah.
So it's timeless.
So then we move on to just another great song. Again, these are all great. I'm just going to like gush over every entry here. But we fast forward a little bit in time, 1973, and we've got Bad, Bad Leroy Brown by Jim Croce. Tell us about this one.
So we had we actually had a few different versions. But Jim Croce, I think he passed away in a plane crash. Like, so he didn't have like a lot of records. But we did have like his collections, like Photographs and Memories and The Best of Jim Croce. And I just thought that his music was like, it was kind of appealed to me because it was like storytelling almost. So Bad, Bad Leroy Brown is pretty much a story about like kind of a greaser, you know, who was like this badass guy. And at the end of the song, he gets his comeuppance, you know, so, you know, he gets the, you know, shit beat out of him. So, how do I, I was trying to personify Jim Croce in one song because there were so many that I could have chosen. I've actually got a Jim Croce tattoo on my arm from another song called Rapid Roy, that stock car boy. And pretty much the song at one point, it says like he's got a tattoo on his arm that says baby, another one that just say hey. So I've got a hey tattoo on my arm. And like, so I was like,
I love that so much.
So I guess Jim Croce, like, did have some major impact on me that I kind of like had to like address in this.
I think you might be our first guest that has a tattoo that matches a song in their mix. That's awesome. That's a great achievement.
We haven't asked every guest.
Oh, fair. So, that's fair.
You know.
Yes.
I guess we can go back maybe, but yeah, for now we're the only confirmed. That's the only confirmed occurrence. I also love this song because like a year prior he had come out with You Don't Mess Around with Jim, which is almost the same song.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
About a real badass guy who kind of gets his comeuppance at the end. Mm-hmm. And they both, it's like he got to like, I read up, he got to like number 8 on the charts with You Don't Mess Around with Jim. And then I feel like he went back in the lab and was like, all right, let's rework this. And he hit number one with Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. So
yeah, it's kind of like the Man With No Name trilogy, except there's only two. What was the first one? Like A Fistful of Dollars, then like For a Few Dollars.
Right,
more.
Right. That's perfect. Okay, so you mentioned Rush earlier, and here's their appearance on the mix. You pick Working Man, which, you know, is an amazing song. Was rated one of the greatest guitar solos of all time by Guitar World magazine. But I also thought, I mean, I didn't realize this was off their debut album. So yeah. Just right out the gate, here's Working Man. But talk about why you picked this Rush song.
I feel like the first album is kind of like overlooked because Neil Peart's not on it. And mm-hmm. I think I almost prefer the first album because it's a little more Workman, you know, no pun intended, but it's like, you know, less about like, you know, walking trees and like spirituality. And it's more just about kind of like living in Canada. And Working Man to me has this really badass kind of almost T-Rex opening riff. So I just think it's, you know, for my money, a song that you can just throw on. Instead of being like, all right, we're going to lay down and listen to 2112, you know, trying to like
right.
figure out the patterns. So it was either like Working Man or Fly By Night. And I think Fly By Night to me is just a really like good pop song. But I was like, probably Working Man is like where it all started for me. You know, but there's so many like Tom Sawyer and Limelight. But yeah, I think Working Man just kind of like is such a great introduction to like, this is Rush. Minus
yes.
the hippy dippy
it
stuff.
It really is just, it's a great Rush song. I agree. And it's amazing that it got radio time at 7 minutes. You know, like I think, I feel like this was kind of the beginning of like much longer songs, you know, starting to be played on the radio.
Yeah.
And it was owed to, it was kind of interesting, it was owed to this this woman, this DJ, Donna Halper, who apparently got introduced to them, put it on the radio. And then everyone in Cleveland just started wanting more of it. So, you know, she was a disc jockey in Cleveland. And it's great because I think, like, the lyrics just apparently just resonated with people. And they're really simple lyrics, right? Like,
yeah.
Literally, it's just kind of repeating about how you wake up at 7, go to work at 9, and you work all the time. And so that's why they call me the Working Man. And it's just like that. It's so basic, but it's so universal as a result. And I just think combine that with, like, an epic, you know, guitar solo plus 3 minute instrumental break, and you're just like, you've got Rush. Like, that's Rush, Rush in a song.
Yeah, in 2010, I think it was, me and my dad came to Nashville to go to this theater that's kind of popular here called the Bell Court, and they kind of show indie movies or more, I don't know, special interest stuff. And we came to see Beyond the Lighted Stage, which was a Rush documentary. And it was the most surreal experience because it was just dads and sons.
Yes.
And so we're waiting in line. I'm looking around. I'm like, oh, man, like everybody had the same experience.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Pretty clear demographic there for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They started playing Cats in the Cradle before the movie. This really resonated with everyone.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, there was like dry eye in the house when like it talked about Neil Peart's like kind of the tragedy he went through. Like, there was a bunch of like grown men crying around me. I was like, oh, okay.
So many feels.
Yeah.
That is amazing. All right, so we take a kind of a big leap in years to 1997 to actually Matt, one of Matt's like favorite bands I've learned. Really, really underrated, I agree. But we've got Mbop by Hanson. Mm-hmm. So tell us about this one.
Okay, so Hanson was the first band I kind of found on my own, if a 10-year-old could find a band on their own.
Sure.
But it kind of like to me resonated immediately. And I've got a kind of interesting story around this song is that I had some kind of like summer flu and my dad had it too. And so, like, for a week in the summer, we just kind of, like, both laid in our underwear sweating in the countryside. And this was at a time in the 90s when, like, literally when they didn't have other programming on VH1 and MTV, they would just play, like, videos nonstop. And it was kind of, like,
right.
almost like a pop radio playlist where it was, like, 15 videos over and over and over again. And, like, looking back, Paranoid Android was another one around the same time that played a bunch, which it seems like... Looking back, it's like, that was kind of weird, but like, but so like, I was flipping through the channels and I saw what I thought was Melissa Joan Hart, Clarissa and Sabrina from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it turned out to be Taylor Hanson singing this song called Mbop. And so I stopped immediately and just like watched it. And I was like, this is the coolest shit I've ever seen. And I saw that the drummer was like, he looked about my age. And it kind of like, I was like, oh, you can be a kid and do this? And that's kind of like what jump-started me into like wanting a guitar, trying to write music. And I think, you know, for a good maybe even 10, 15 years, it was so uncool to like Hanson. So it was kind of like a secret. Like a secret of mine.
So, yes.
Because prior to that, like literally the only cassettes I owned that were my own were like Michael Jackson's Dangerous and like a shit ton of Weird Al. And so like I literally thought that like Give It Away was actually Yabba Dabba Doo Now. And like yeah. So all these popular alternative artists, I had like the Weird Al version.
And you kept going, hey, they ripped off Weird Al every time you turned on the radio.
First time I heard Chili Peppers Give It Away, yeah. I was like, oh, that's that Yabba Dabba Doo song.
Oh my God.
That is greatness.
I can't believe actually we haven't had a Weird Al song entry yet. You know, that's
I considered
he is,
it.
He is one of the greatest musicians of all time.
Yeah,
I have to
that's
say.
That's got to come up at some point. Yeah,
it has to. Yeah.
I was going to say Hanson. We mentioned them as kind of a one-hit wonder a few episodes back, and talked about their second single off this album, "Where's the Love?" And I think that song is really good. But you know, the one thing I said at that time is these guys can really play their instruments.
Oh yeah,
like even at that age, but especially now, if you hear them, you know, interviewed and they still play music, like they're really good musicians.
Yeah, I think that's what was so important to me, because like I saw people my age doing it, and but yeah, to me they weren't a one-hit wonder at all. Like yeah. Like, Where's the Love?
That's what I was told. Yeah, that's what I was told. Yeah, when I brought it up, everyone was like, no, if you were of a certain age, you know, I think I'm a little older than you are. But yeah, for me, I was in college at the time. And yeah, to me, it was like I just kind of knew him as this one-hit wonder. But yeah, I talked to younger people who were like, oh, no, I know a lot of Hanson's music. Like, they can go deep on it. So
yeah, I mean, even as kind of late as 2005, they had a song called Penny and Me, which was equally infectious and it was really good. So if you haven't heard that one, go check it out.
Okay, going on to track five. Now, we mentioned you toured with this guy at one point in time. I love this song, Wasted and Ready by Ben Queller, Texas's own Ben Queller. So talk about why you picked this Ben Queller song.
All right, another story. I wasn't sick this time, but I was up at 3 a.m., for you know, as teenagers do, just for no reason.
Sure.
And I saw this, you know, scrappy dude playing on a, like, climbing a large strawberry, and I was like, all right, cool, what is this? And it was Ben Queller, Wasted and Ready, and immediately I was like, I need that in my life. It's so cool. Like like the lyrics are kind of nonsense, and it's just like this anthem that kind of goes with the, you know, I love rock and roll, and you know, the three chord ba-na-ba, like we just teenage dirtbag, just that kind of generic three chord progression. But it was so badass, and like this was back in the day where you pretty much had to go to Best Buy to like hear more, and so
right, yes,
and that was one of those albums I totally blind bought and just like listened to religiously, pretty much the next 2 years until his second album came out. The reason why I put it on there is because it was like what shifted away me like from nu metal, which I was really into until I was about 14. And so this is like I was 15 and I heard that, and that's what kind of started my rock renaissance. I was like, oh, wow. So you can get cooler than, you know, Fred Durst and Jonathan Davis. And like, I think Linkin Park was a big one at the time for me. And I think the only cool nu metal band I was into and still to this day is Deftones. So they kind of like survived that, but everybody else got put to the side when I found kind of the more indie rock thing.
Yeah, Ben Queller is just amazing. Great performing artist too. Just like to see live. It was so much fun. It was at the Granada Theater. Whenever I saw him and you guys perform, it was a great show. Yeah, all around great show, start to finish.
And that was a trip for me because you know, it just wasn't that album and that song. It was like, you know, I bought On My Way and I bought the self-titled, and then you know, I got Changing Horses and literally saw him six times on my own just throughout my life. And then we got the offer to open up for him, and I was like, fuck yes.
Incredible.
Yes, let's do that. And the first time, you know, to me he was a superstar, but but the first time like I watched him sound check, I almost had this like weird like depersonalization feeling. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I'm side stage watching Ben Queller's sound check, you know, like sound check Lizzie, which is like one of his big ballads to his wife. And I was like, how the fuck did I get here? Like, you know, 3 a.m. watching MTV to here I am watching him side stage. And like, we developed a really good friendship, and I still, you know, I'll text him every once in a while, you know, which is super bizarre to me. But part of me feels like I willed it into existence somehow.
All right, let's move on to track 6, Debaser by the Pixies, which has like a really disturbing backstory to it, actually, whenever I read about this. It is a great Pixie song. I had actually not heard this particular song by them. And it's just like, yeah, it's classic Pixie sound. So tell us about this track in particular.
Okay, so there was this period in time where I was convinced I was going to be a filmmaker, which doesn't make any sense if you're a teenager in Bowling Green, Kentucky, like literally with no money.
Is that not a hub for filmmaking?
No, it's not even a hub for film watching, really. So, but, you know, I think I remember like being like 15, 16 and being like, I don't even want a car. I want a digital camera. Like, you know, who cares about cars and girls and all this thing? Like, I want to be a filmmaker. And so, like, my entry point was kind of like, you know, Kevin Smith, of course, and all that stuff like that. But yeah, eventually we got around to Fight Club and we heard the end song, which was Where's My Mind? And my best friend, he bought Surfer Rosa, and I thought it was okay. I was like, all right, you know, it's fine. It's kind of scrappy. It's whatever. And I liked more the pop side of it, like Gigantic and less of the abrasive stuff. And I think I just had some extra money from working at a movie theater and was in Best Buy, which, by the way, Best Buy was pretty much where you went and bought CDs in Bowling Green. You know, we had a couple other like stores, but they were really expensive. And Best Buy, you get one for like 12 to 15 bucks instead of 25. Anyway, but so I bought Doolittle, had no idea what was on it. And that was the first song that came on. And Amelia, I was like mind blown. I was like, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. Like, and that kind of set me on a journey for like the next 5 years, kind of trying to find more music like that and get that same, like, it was like somebody shot adrenaline into my heart. I didn't know what he was talking about, but just the fact he was screaming under like these amazing pop hooks, that was just like, it was a huge pivot. It's me as a person. Like, I was like, who cares about filmmaking? I want to be a musician now. like I want to scream like that guy.
I love the sound of this song. But when I got into the lyrics, you know, to Sammer's point, like the background of it and the actual lyrics, it's really kind of weird. But yeah, just the sound of it definitely takes you to a place.
Yeah. And to me, like, the lyrics are mostly nonsense. You know, like, I know he's mainly just talking about that Salvador Dali movie. And I don't know if there's anything more to it than that. I just feel like he's just kind of describing the movie. He's like, you know.
Yeah, the movie sounds really weird, and it's not on Netflix, so I didn't get a chance to watch it.
You can watch portions of it on YouTube. And it's like, it's not as weird as you think it is. Like, you know, there's the line slicing in my eyeballs. And it is just this woman who's like staring, look at the camera, and then this guy comes up behind her with a razor blade. And like, it cuts to like a close-up of a cow head, but you're not supposed to know it's a cow head. And he just like slices the eyeball out. And like, yeah, that sounds weird, but you watch and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, our family movie night is Friday, so I'll throw that out there.
Yeah, see, they're going to love that.
See what the kids think. Yeah. It's either going to be that or High School Musical again.
Oh, no. So,
It's a coin toss.
So that movie has persisted? Past generations?
It has. All three. We've watched them multiple times. So,
can I make a side note about High School Musical 3? Is that I worked at the movie theater when that movie came out, and it bugged me to no end that there was only three of them, and that one was called Senior Year. I was like, man, they really should have made four.
That is true. That's a missed opportunity and also very confusing.
Well, I know way too much about these movies. The second one is all about just their summer job. It's just focuses on the summer. So that's not even, you know, part of their official high school year. But anyway, look, we could do a good 45 minutes on the three High School Musicals. I've got a lot of issues with those movies, but we've got to move on. We're going to focus on the mix. Number 7 here, you get into Trailer Trash by Modest Mouse. Yes. Now, this came out about the same time as Hansen. Now, did you discover them at the same time, or was this, I'm guessing this was much later on that you discovered
them?
Definitely
not. I was introduced to Modest Mouse, but I feel like, you know, 90% of the population was through Float On. And very similar to the Pixies, it was like, what is this? You know, it was like, it was just incredible. And me and my friends all just kind of like gravitated towards this new band, quote unquote. And like, then we immediately went backwards and we're like, oh, well, dude, that Good News stuff is not even good. It's like, so, and the way we kind of did it as buddies in high school was that not everybody, we couldn't buy the whole discography ourselves. So we would just get like, everybody would get one CD from the band. And if you were lucky, you got the good one or the one you could listen to over and over again and not like, you know, maybe one of Modest Mouse's deep catalog EPs that wasn't very good or something. But, and then we would kind of like burn them and trade them or just listen to it in somebody's car when they were driving us around. But like, so I got Lonesome Crowded West, and that to me was immediately just like set my brain on fire. I think it opens up with like, Teeth Like God's Shoe Shine, which is this like riff, and then it's just screaming. It's just like, and so I was kind of at this point in my life, my senior year of high school, I was working two jobs, like one at Taco Bell and then another one at the movie theater. And I feel like all I was doing was working and going to school. And I was kind of depressed. I didn't realize it at the time. But that song, Trailer Trash, it was kind of like a mantra for me. Like, you know, the passage of time and there's a, I don't know, it was a toss up between Trailer Trash and Bankrupt on Selling. Because in Bankrupt on Selling, he says something like, so I'll go to college and I'll learn some big words and I'll talk real loud and goddamn right I'll be heard. You'll remember the guy who said all those big words he must have learned in college. And I was like, oh yeah, I got to go to college. So, but right now my mind's kind of blanking. There's a just as important lyric in Trailer Trash.
Well, he has the, I hope I can pass high school.
Yes. So that was equally important. But I think at the time also, I was kind of like disillusioned about, you know, maybe like marriage and kind of the basic life. And I was kind of rebellious and I was like, you know, I just kind of want to be a rock star. And so I think that just really, you know, resonated with me, like, you know, short love and a long divorce, a couple of kids, of course, they don't mean anything. Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. Just, it was kind of this realistic song. Okay. And like, you know, being from a small town in Kentucky, I didn't feel like Trailer Trash, but I did feel less than, because, you know, we were in the South and we aren't known for being a cultural mecca of the arts or anything. And I really wanted to be where, you know, the arts and music were. I wanted to be a cool kid, and but I felt like I couldn't be because I was in, you know, bum fuck nowhere. So like, but you know, looking back, we really weren't that small. We have this like amazing university with 20,000 students in it. Just kind of like, but to me at the time it felt like, you know, the smallest place in the world, and especially Nashville was down the street, you know. And
yeah,
but a funny little bit about this song is there's this line that's he says, it's been a long time, which agrees with this watch of mine. But I had the like misheard lyric for years. I thought it was, and it's been a long time, would you grease up this watch of mine, which made total sense to me. I'm like, oh yeah, because the cogs have stopped, you got to grease them up to keep it going.
Oh my god,
you know way too much about watchmaking. Yeah. That's the problem.
It just occurred to me that we have to do like a mix of just like lyrics where it's commonly misheard, you know. Because I think there's a lot of songs out there. I can't tell you the number of times that I thought for the longest time U2 song, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on the title, but all about like seeing the world, you know, see China in front of you, and I'm blanking, Beautiful Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was all about a woman. I thought he was singing She Turns Right Around in Front of You or something. It was the longest time, and I looked at the lyrics, I was like, oh, I feel sheepish now. It's completely changed the meaning of this song in my head.
I have a recent one, a good buddy of mine, that song Radioactive by Imagine Dragons, that was huge a few years ago. He had no idea it was called Radioactive. He thought it was saying ready to rock you, or ready for action. So like
ready for action. Yeah. I could see that.
And, yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's Radioactive. It's in the title. He's like, no, it's ready for action. I'm like, no, man.
That's awesome. And they say it about 30 times. Right. So you think at one point it would be like, well, maybe it's something else. Yeah.
Let's go to track number 8, Hummingbird by Wilco. And I got to say, I love the opening line to this song. His goal in life was to be an echo. Yes. I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm just immediately hooked after hearing that.
Me too. Yeah. Here's going to be your daily double for new things. Is I actually have a hummingbird tattoo as well. So like,
nice.
Wow.
I feel like to me, that's awesome. This song kind of hit me at a weird point in college, where I kind of almost like resigned to being an echo. You know, just kind of accepted the fact that maybe I was mm-hmm. just going to be, somebody not special. And I think this song kind of helped me like be okay with that. Remember to remember me floating, standing still in your past, floating fast like a hummingbird. I think the song is actually about, a man who's in love with somebody that he can't have. And so he just kind of climbs the tallest mountain and decides to die alone, which is like incredibly sad. But at the same time,
yeah,
the song is so beautiful that you kind of get lost in like, the majesty of it. Like, it has a kazoo solo in it, which is incredible. So, but like,
more songs need those.
Exactly.
I think.
And like, it's like probably the first time you hear a kazoo and go like, oh, that works. Yes. But the piano is so happy. And it's like one of those, like Group Love, their album was called Never Trust a Happy Song. And like, this song is like one of those, like, oh, this isn't happy at all. It's a very, very sad song. And, yeah, I don't know. To this day, like, it just kind of like almost takes me away to a different place. And I feel like that's why I wanted on my body forever. Cause like, also it's a reminder to be humble, and don't act like you're the shit.
No, I think this song, it's really interesting. I think musically, because it does kind of sort of pick up, it has some kind of happy beats along the way, but you're right. Lyrically, it is kind of like, oh, this is somewhat of a sad story, but yeah, in the end, I think the music kind of picks it back up and makes you, like you said, makes you feel okay.
Yeah, and so, it's such a bright spot on a very, very dark album. The whole album, which Jeff Tweedy was dealing with a pill addiction and rehab at the time, the whole album is kind of like one gigantic panic attack. And it's, unsettling and it's slow and you have to really, like, put time into it. And if you guys remember, they just came off Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, which is considered one of the greatest albums of all time. And it's just like banger mm-hmm. after banger after banger. It's just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And you put on A Ghost Is Born and it's this slow burn of just like, what? And I hated the album for years until like, I listened, in college, listened to it again. I was like, oh no, this is their best album to me now. Just cause for that same reason.
Well, that's interesting. Cause I talk about Bruce Springsteen a lot on this podcast, but, Born in the USA was such a massive hit. And then he followed that up with the Tunnel of Love album. And it was just such a drastic departure from what Born in the USA was that initially it hit number one because people were just so much, there was so much anticipation around it. But then, it was actually kind of people weren't as big of fans of it. But then looking back, it's actually a really good and complete album from beginning to end. So yeah, similar situation. It's hard to follow up that big, massive album, I think, for bands. Yeah,
I think sometimes it's best not to. It's like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
Tunnel of Love.
Yeah, just go in a different direction, right?
Yeah. Is that the one where he's like wearing a white suit in front of a white car?
That's right. Okay, yeah, cool. That's the album cover.
So my dad's...
Yeah, but the album, it's interesting because like beginning to end, it's sort of like the start and middle and end of a relationship if you listen to it all the way through.
Nice, yeah.
But it's totally different than Born in the USA.
Okay, that was one of those albums that my dad had and I always looked at but never listened to because I remember the album cover. Maybe I have to go check it out then.
That's right. all right, so track number 9, we get into Lust for Life by Girls.
Yeah.
And when I heard this, I felt like the lead singer, it almost sounded like he was doing an impression of Elvis Costello. Like the sound of his voice was so similar to that, I felt, but a little different. But a really cool song.
Yeah. And what's funny is that he never really uses that voice ever again on any of the other songs. So maybe you're right. It's kind of like, I feel like he's almost making fun of himself. Because he's being mm-hmm. so whiny and, longing and just kind of being, I don't know, just kind of asking for, at the same time, it's too much and not enough, you know, like, you know, because he goes from wanting a, you know, boyfriend to a father to all this different stuff, you know, a beach house, and then he just kind of wants a pizza and a bottle of wine, which is doable. You know, like,
that is very doable. I had one literally Sunday night. I can tell you it's great.
You know, I actually tried that combo after falling in love with this band and that song, and I just couldn't do pizza and wine together. I'm like, nah, it's not working for me. But so yeah, I found this song, I don't remember how, but I saw the video first, and it was just this slice of like life snapshot of like a bunch of 20 somethings living in San Francisco. And so literally just, they're just shooting all of their friends on a film camera, just taking baths and running around and just, you know, lip singing the lyrics. And it looked like, I need to be there. I want to go do that. I don't know what they're doing, but I want to do that. Like, and it was the right time. I think I was like 22 when I heard it, or 23. Mm-hmm. And I was at the end of my, I was a senior in college, and that band just did something for me. That I was like, okay, now this is it. Just jangly, like jangly pop music that's highly emotional, but not in like the way that emo was emotional a couple of years prior. It was like, I don't know, vulnerability. And then like Christopher Owens was almost like kind of like effeminate in the way he talked about things. And I was like, this is kind of like refreshing. And it's unfortunate that the band only lasts two albums and one EP. Cause like I went and saw them twice and it was incredible. And you know, rest in peace.
Well, on the topic of kind of emo and punk and all this stuff, you've got track 10 here, Falling in Love Again by Joyce Maynard.
Yes, yes. So this is more recent. And so I guess kind of pivoting back to emo is I was really into emo, but not the mall punk emo, you know, like your Fall Out Boys and stuff like that. I was kind of into like the Get Up Kids, and Modest Mouse was actually considered emo back in the day. But like, so Get Up Kids, Page of the Lion, Elliott Smith. Some people might shoot me for saying he's emo, but he's very emo to me. And early Bright Eyes was incredibly emo. Before he shifted into kind of alt folk, Dylan wannabe territory. But so when I heard Joyce Manor, and it was great for me because I actually just gone through a breakup. And I was like, what I used to do was I would go on like 3 or 4 mile walk just to kind of like clear my head, and I listen to music, and I put that on, and it was another one of those immediately like resonating, like, oh yes, like I want to like, you know, fly on this song forever. And it's unfortunate because the album's only 18 minutes long. So so you know, one walk you can spin the whole record at least, you know, a dozen times.
Right.
But yeah, so this was the first song I heard. And like, to me, it's almost like it hits that, like, just the, I don't know, the dissonance, and just, there's only one verse he says twice. It's just like, it's like he liked that verse. Let's, you know, same as the first. It's so nice. Let's repeat it. And, something about the lyrics are so pedestrian, but they're also so cool. Like, you know, he says, after, you know, after finishing your birthday drugs, looked at a yearbook unprepared. You know, it's just kind of like, it's some...
I love that line.
Yeah, right? Because I feel like...
That one is great.
It's almost like everybody kind of had that one point in their life where they got fucked up on their birthday. So...
Right. Well, and just the whole concept of like looking, opening a yearbook, or really, you know, going back in time, like it's like going through photos or whatever. And then you are unprepared for kind of what you see, and it just throws you right back there.
Yeah.
So I really love that line a lot. I thought that was great.
Yeah. And it's like this weird, like, I mean, yeah, that is a really personal experience. So every time I show somebody like pictures of me from high school, I'm like, you have to understand, I was a different person, you know, but like, but funny enough, one of my senior photos, I'm wearing a Ben Queller shirt, but,
oh, that's great.
And, another one, I'm posing with my cat.
So. Okay, yeah, the full,
all right,
yeah, full,
well,
coverage there,
one for two, that's right. Not bad.
So
okay.
But yeah, and I feel like I don't know, it was heavy in a heavy, like in a good way, not like in heavy music, but it just like it kind of appealed to that like longing, interest, and emotions I had when I was younger, and it kind of struck that chord because I was going through a breakup at the time, and you know, hit the aggressive level, and the kind of, I don't know, it's a perfect song. And this is another one of those bands I've got all their records and still frequent, but they're not my favorite records to like put on the turntable because I have to flip them 5 minutes later. They're just really short.
So speaking of breakups, track 11 here, Something by Julian Baker. I wrote down, she has a beautiful voice, but this is a really sad song.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just that song. It's every Julian Baker song. Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. My car exploded on me coming back from Louisville, going to Nashville. And by explode, I mean the engine just kind of gave up. So I had to go mm-hmm. and go buy a new car. And it was away. It was kind of like I bought the car at least an hour and a half away from Nashville because that's where I could find the deal that my parents set up for me. And on the way back, it was a Friday. And I don't know if they still do this, but Spotify used to just have New Music Friday playlist. And I saw this cover for Julian Baker, and the cover was so bland. It was just this girl with a turquoise overlay on top of it, and the album mm-hmm. was also kind of a lame title. It was called Sprained Ankle, and I'm like, what could this be? what is this? She looked like she was 12 too. I was like, what is this child with a sprained ankle? What is she gonna tell me? And it was so immediate though. The first song, it was so sad, and I don't know if, 2015, I must have been really sad, because it was that album for a solid 3 or 4 months was on repeat, and something about the song Something just broke me every time I listened to it. But it was a good breaking. It was like watching a good sad movie, or just mm-hmm. and it's one of those songs I feel like everybody can relate to in some way, just the kind of internal turmoil of loving somebody and not being reciprocated.
Exactly. It's funny because, Matt, I have very similar notes to you. My opening notes here are beautiful voice, gut-wrenching story, mm-hmm. yes. being told. No, it was really, it's powerful. I think I actually also wrote, if I go through a breakup again, which I really hope I don't need to, but this is going to make that mix. This is a really good breakup song.
Then you should check out, there's a song called Everybody Does on the album. And it's kind of more of one of her, it feels almost poppy, but it's not. But at the end, she's just talking shit about herself for a good solid minute and a half. And then at the end, she's like, but you're gonna run when you find out who I am. And then she's starts yelling, you're gonna run. It's all right. Everybody does. It's just
wow.
And what's crazy is she's been really successful, critically lauded. I saw her play the Ryman to a packed house. And I've seen her 3 times. And the first time was at the Exit Inn. It was packed. And then I was at the Ryman, which is called the Mother Church here, or it's the venue to play. Yeah. And her new album came out recently, and it's still sad. I'm like, it's somebody get this girl a cup of coffee and a hug, because she's seen the world and has such great success. I'm just ready for a Julian Baker album that's kind of resting on her laurels a little bit, you know?
Yeah. She needs to go to one of those Tony Robbins seminars, maybe.
But she's an artist that's, I think, really conflicted, because she was a really, she might still be a huge Christian, and she was also gay. And so that conflict within her, it seems it's constantly tearing her apart. And she was an addict at mm-hmm. a young age. And it's just girl, you lived so rough. Much life in such a short amount of time. I think she's 23 now or 24.
That's incredible.
Wow.
So last track here, speaking of singers that at least personally I find give me all the feels, you've got Naeem by Bon Iver. Yes.
Yeah.
So tell us about this last track taking us home here.
Okay. So Bon Iver I found in 2009, like everybody did, with Skinny Love. Immediately I was like, what is that? I need more of that. And it was funny because I was a huge fan of TV on the Radio back in the day. And I always had this idea, I want to do folk music with TV on the Radio vocals. And then I heard Skinny Love and I was like, oh, that was my idea. He's like, ma, 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 that. And I was like, right. Well, he took my idea because he had all the falsetto and the the kind of low doo-wop vocals. And I was like, well, mm-hmm. shit, I can't do that idea anymore, but I will listen to this guy do it. And in that first album, it's so different than everything else he ended up doing. And I remember that being kind of disappointing to me. Where, with Julian Baker, she kind of stayed in that realm, but Justin Vernon was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go explore Witch House and other things. So when it got to, so his entire discography to me is equally just top tier. Like, he hasn't done anything bad, in my opinion. But the first time I heard Naeem was he did like a cell phone recording of him doing it live, and it was like something he was still working through, and it was like this piano version. And even then, it had like the energy and just like transcendent quality where people were just like, hollering, like, yeah, whatever that mm-hmm. was. And so I waited for 2 years to hear a studio version of that song. And I went to record listening party at Grimey's, which is a local record shop here in Nashville. And it was a packed house, and just so everybody could like get their first listen in of this record that came out a month later. And when that song came on, like my body filled with like this strange like chill and warmth at the same time, like almost like I wasn't ready to hear it, like oh my god,
here wow.
It's almost like being on a roller coaster. You're like, oh no, I wasn't ready. Like, and I just like, my heart rate elevated, and I was like, okay, just hold it together. And because
that's amazing.
It was so much better than I could have ever imagined. Like it just, I think Anthony Fantano from The Needle Drop described it like, this song is going somewhere, and wherever it's going, I want a ticket. Like, I'm going to go with it. And it does feel that way. It feels like it's constantly building mm-hmm. momentum. And kind of when it gets to the crescendo, it's like, it's almost like I've had enough. And if I take any more, I'm never coming back. And it finally kind of falls into this, like, you know, and I can see crying. And it's like, then it's over. And you're like, what the fuck was that? Like, so you go back and listen again. And to me, like, I don't even think the lyrics mean anything, like, personally. I feel like Justin Vernon in his later career has just kind of been like, whatever. Here's some crap. You know, it's not really about anything. Like, he's like, I fell off a bass boat. What does that mean? You know, what's a bass boat?
Right.
It's like, yeah.
I'm having a bad
time.
Well,
no, I felt the same way. Like, just musically, I was getting kind of fired up.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so good. Like, just the buildup. And then when I dove into the lyrics, it was kind of the same reaction. Like, what am I reading here versus what I'm listening to?
Yeah, I mean,
But I think it's a great song.
Yeah, and I guess this sort of relates is that I also have a Bon Iver tattoo. So, but it's the
wow, it's hat trick right there. That's great.
But it's from the album before, so I don't know if it counts. It was from I'm escaping me right now, but which is hilarious. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. So huge.
Well, three tattoos off a 12 song mix is going to be a tough mark to beat. Well, but that is the mark.
Yeah, it
okay?
definitely
so
helped me
guests,
compile the playlist. So I was like, well, this is on my body, so this must be important to me.
That is a good shortcut for making one
definitely.
Of these.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. That was, an amazing mix. And Samer and I, whenever we get these, we immediately like listen to it and then start texting each other about, you know, our thoughts on it. And we both were like, this is really good.
Well, thanks. Yeah,
man, we can't wait to talk about this. Yeah, so yeah, great job.
There were some
great
songs
job.
Like I wanted to include instead, and it just didn't fit the flow, so I had to like axe them and just be like, no, yeah, this is more important because it fits the flow. So that was my total intention.
Perfect. All right. Well, Tony, tell the people out there where they can find you, whether it's on social media or whatever you're doing these days.
You know what? I'm not really big on social media. I have nothing to promote
okay.
anymore. I'm just
okay.
I'm very happy just being normal dude in Nashville. I'm a graphic designer and freelance videographer, and I'm just kind of enjoying like being not out and about. So, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's
well,
it.
Good. Well,
so don't follow me.
Thank you for taking a break from your from your life to join us on the podcast.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. Samer, let's talk about where the people can find us.
Yes, they can find us at Super Awesome Mix on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the places. We're most active on Instagram, so give us a follow there if you want to stay up to date with the latest. And you can also help support the show in numerous ways. We've got some awesome merchandise we're selling on superawesomemix.com. All good things. So, yeah, check us out. Tell your friends. Give us a review in the Apple Podcast app if that's how you listen. We really appreciate all those things. It helps us reach even more people to enjoy the podcast. So thank you so much so far for all of your support and everything.
That's right. Yes. Without your support, we couldn't keep bringing on great guests like Tony. So there you have it. Another super awesome mix in the books. And so for Sammer and Tony, this is Matt, and we will see you next time with yet another super awesome mix. Super Awesome Mix is brought to you by DLM. Make shopping easy with DLM, the one-stop shop for all your casual clothing needs. Shop DLMSupplyCo.com and enter the promo code AWESOME at checkout to save 15% off your first purchase. That's DLMSupplyCo.com.